Get energized and excited to tell the world, hey, you can call me Catholic. Live from the Christ Cathedral Campus in Garden Grove, California, EWTN Global Catholic Radio Network and Orange County Catholic Radio present Call Me Catholic with Peggy Normandin.
Whatever is true, whatever is honorable, whatever is just, whatever is pure, whatever is lovely, whatever is gracious. If there is any excellence, and if there is anything worthy of praise, oh, we can always find things and people worthy of praise. And St. Paul says we should think about the good stuff as we approach the Advent season. Find the light and dwell in it. And, well, let's talk about it, too. That is what we try to do on Call Me Catholic every week. Follow the counsel of good St. Paul. I am Peggy Normandin, and you have arrived at Call Me Catholic, a hopefully light and lively hour of conversation intended to explore, affirm, and celebrate our Catholic identity in these modern times. So we can wake up and say to the world each and every day, oh, yeah, you can call me Catholic. You know that I am never alone here in the studio. No, not yet, at least. They don't leave me alone here. Jimmy G is the man who gets our words on the air, my faithful engineer and chief fact checker. Hey there, Jimmy G.
I was going to say, pardon me, I got a call I got to take here.
Don't you dare. Don't you dare.
I was just
Stay with me now. Come on, don't
checking
faint.
My phone to make sure it was turned off. We always do that before the show.
Yes, keep it on silent because this is our priority right now. We are present to our listeners.
This is true.
We are officially in the month of December, Jimmy G, and tomorrow is the first Sunday in Advent. Does that hold any sense of daunting expectation or exhilaration for you?
Probably a little bit of both. You know, I'm just amazed from the get-go that we're here in December already. You know, it's just, it's amazing to me.
Well, does your wife, Mindy, does she kind of get excited about the decorations? And
She really gets into it.
The fa-la-la-la-la.
She really does. I mean, she's got the lists out for, okay, these are the gifts for this, that, and the other. I mean, she really does get it.
Well, you got to start early so that you don't end up with that crush of panic.
Right,
like,
exactly.
Oh, I didn't get anything for this person and that
yep,
person.
Yep.
Well, I think we need some Christmas lights in the studio. What do you think? Did you put them up at home yet?
Yeah, we got the tree up.
Oh, wow. Good. Okay.
We have a few of those really giant bulbs on our tree, in the outside, our outside tree.
I think I'm going to bring something Christmassy in for next week.
Yeah, sure. Yeah,
we'll officially be in the season. Well, I think balance is the key. Now we can't shove off all the trappings of the Christmas holiday season. I do have on my Christmas shoes today. You probably didn't notice, but they've got little Santas on the top of them.
I did not notice.
Yeah, I broke those out. I think it's December, so I can do that. But as Catholic Christians, we know that we also embrace the season of Advent, which is a time of preparation and contemplation and waiting. We're not a really good culture of waiting anymore. We kind of live in a bring it on right now lifestyle. So we're going to explore some of that today. But first, I want to remind you that Jimmy G and I are coming to you from high atop the Tower of Hope on the beautiful Christ Cathedral campus in Orange County, California. We are the great Diocese of Orange with so many diverse cultures and demographics preparing to honor Advent in the rich tradition of their heritage. We have vibrant Asian and Vietnamese and Hispanic and Korean communities here, and they all bring their unique cultural influences into our celebration of Advent. I love it. So with tomorrow being the first Sunday of Advent, we are going to talk about how to get into that mindset. How do we discover or cultivate the quietness and the mystery and expectation of Advent in the midst of the busy and very fun demands of, let's call it, the jingle bell season?
Exactly.
We can do it. That is why you listeners are listening to EWTN right now, right? Because you know there's something deeper and more profound than what the alluring commercial world offers, appealing as that may be sometimes. So let's dig into this issue today. Our guest today is author and journalist James Day. He wrote a series of newspaper articles that will surely inspire you to ponder more deeply the role we all play in preparing for the coming of Christ by building up and serving the least fortunate among us. I mean, Jesus came into the world as a small, marginalized baby. He didn't really have a roof over his head. James Day, who also manages the EWTN studio here in Orange County, in a series of newspaper articles, profiled four remarkable women in Southern California who are tackling what he calls the globalization of indifference and making such an impact in their communities by addressing the needs of those who are struggling with lots of life issues, from death to housing. We have been hearing a lot in the news these days about women as victims. I say, let's talk about women as empowered forces for good. So James Day will join me in a moment with some insight on that subject. And then in chatting with Catholics, I take my microphone out to a parish school here in the Diocese of Orange, and I talk with some second graders about who they'd like to be in the story of the first Christmas. We're all setting up our creche scenes right now with all the little figures. And I always like to imagine myself as one of the people I'm in the figures that I'm setting up.
Well, I can't speak for the other shows here on EWTN, but whenever we have the chance to hear from the little ones, hear from the kids and their perspectives, that's fun. It's a blast.
Jesus liked talking to the little kids, too. Yeah. They're fun. Okay, but first up, it's the Call Me Catholic Countdown, which this week is going to be the top five feast days or solemnities to look for and honor during the Advent season. So if you're trying to find some tools to help you enrich your Advent, you need look no further than our church liturgical calendar, because we have some feast days in there to aid our contemplation of the mysteries of the season. You know, the season of Lent before Easter does not have a competing secular season. Okay. Sometimes Valentine's Day falls in Lent. Mm. But otherwise, it's not hard to remember that we're in the penitential season of Lent. But Advent runs parallel with the secular Christmas season, which we all like to participate in. I mean, we're not hermits. So we need to find some tools to help us remember that it's Advent in the midst of all the Christmas festivities. So we have five feast days that will help us wait and pray for the arrival of the Christ child during the season of Advent. So here we go. It's Call Me Catholic Light. The chatty Catholic.
When you said reflecting on the season and stuff, I thought I'll go with the mellow one.
Okay. All right. So number five on my list of feast days to remember and really dig into during the season of Advent is St. Andrew's feast day. Now, I've got to admit, St. Andrew's feast day is not technically in Advent. We just celebrated it on November 30th. But it's closely related to Advent because St. Andrew was the very first disciple called by our Lord. And he is the one who got his brother, St. Peter, to become Jesus' disciple, too. And we know how the rest of that turned out. So in keeping with his role as the first, the Sunday that falls nearest to St. Andrew's feast day on November 30th is always the first Sunday of Advent, the beginning of our new liturgical year. So that's kind of cool.
And we have kind of some expanded time this year, too, right? Because Thanksgiving wasn't actually the last Thursday of November.
No, you're right. So does that make the Christmas season longer then?
I think so.
Okay, I like that. I heard somebody say recently that it's going to go by really fast, but I thought, we had a little more time here. I didn't think I had to panic yet. So St. Andrew's feast day is a good feast day to contemplate the imminent arrival of Advent. There's a very popular novena called the St. Andrew Christmas Novena that runs not 9 days like traditional novenas do, but from November 30th all the way to December 24th. So you can look that up, St. Andrew's Christmas Novena, and it's just a quick, beautiful little prayer about the birth of Christ, and you're supposed to say it 15 times a day. You know, so do what you can with that. Apparently, St. Andrew was kind of a taskmaster. Okay, number four would be the feast day of the Immaculate Conception, always December 8th, always during Advent, which means it's this Friday, and it is a holy day of obligation. So it's an easy way to deepen our Advent experience, to consider how Mary, our Blessed Mother, was prepared by God to be the mother of his Son, immune from all stain of original sin, so that she could be a perfect vessel for the Christ child. It certainly gives us a reason to ponder how we can be a more perfect and holy carrier of Christ's message to the world.
Amen.
And there you go. Number three would be St. Lucy's feast day, always in Advent, always December 13th. She was an early Christian martyr, a beautiful young woman who was born with a zeal for Jesus, as some of those early Christians were, and she wanted to remain single and devote her entire life in service to Christ, but she was very beautiful and intensely pursued by suitors who wanted to marry her, and she held on to her vow of wanting to be a single, chaste woman. And so they resented her vow of virginity, and they tortured her as they did back then. Apparently, they're still doing some of that now to women who want to hold on to their virtue. She survived many attempts on her life, but eventually did succumb to death. So she is the patron saint of the blind because apparently, legend has it or tradition has it, that either someone poked her eyes out to disfigure her, or she took her own eyes out to be less appealing to men. Mm. But at any rate, she is the patron saint of the blind, and her name Lucy means light. So let's remember her feast day on December 13th, and remember the light of the Star of Bethlehem. Let's be that star for others to find their way to the manger. Okay, number two, an easy one, St. Nicholas's feast day on December 6th. I don't have to tell you that St. Nicholas, a 4th century bishop from Turkey, Greece area, had an extraordinary character, and he was a model of generosity, makes him really beloved and revered as a protector and helper of those in need, especially children and single women, I think. But take some time to learn his history. It's rich and well-documented and will certainly put you in a mind for Christmas. And my number one feast day that will get us closer to the true meaning of Advent has got to be the Feast of Our Lady of Guadalupe on December 12th. To me, Short of the history of Christ's time on earth, I think the apparition of Our Lady of Guadalupe to Juan Diego on Tepeyac Hill, now Mexico City, in 1531, is one of the most compelling bodies of evidence of the veracity of our Catholic faith and the true message of it. Dig into that, my friends. We know it well here in Southern California, but if you are in other parts of the country where you are not as familiar with the story of Our Lady of Guadalupe and her image and how that was painted by God, I mean, it's the perfect image to dwell on during the Advent season. Our Lady of Guadalupe is really unlike any other apparition of the Blessed Virgin Mary because, first of all, it's the only apparition where Our Lady left a miraculous image of herself, unmade by human hands.
That's right.
Secondly, it's the only universally venerated Madonna and child image where Our Lady appears pregnant instead of holding the infant Jesus. So that isn't that a perfect image?
Exactly.
There you have it, my top five favorite feast days to help bring us to a deeper meaning of a deeper relationship with Advent during the forefront of our Christmas holiday season. We'd like you to join us at our little Advent party on our Facebook page. We'll be posting lots of fun and hopefully inspirational messages for you on Facebook.com/CallMeCatholic this month. It's going to be our special Advent gift to our listeners and followers and likers. So do give us a like. This is the season of giving. So give us a like. We've also got pictures from all our guests in the studios and links to the things we discuss on the show. So check us out and join our Facebook family, Facebook.com/CallMeCatholic. Author and journalist James Day is up next to share some outstanding profiles in faith for women he featured in a series of articles he authored on the globalization of indifference. Advent is no time for indifference, and these women's stories will inspire you to be a light in this world where so many need so much. So stay with us. I'm Peggy Normandin, and you're listening to Call Me Catholic on the EWTN Global Catholic Radio Network.
Exploring the perils and blessings of embracing a Catholic identity. This is Call Me Catholic with Peggy Normandin.
Hello, friends, and welcome back to the almost season of Lent. I'm Peggy Normandin, and here on Call Me Catholic, we're in Advent prep mode. Tomorrow is the first Sunday of Advent. Jesus tells us in the Gospel to watch, be alert. You do not know when the Lord of the house is coming, whether in the evening or at midnight or at cockcrow or in the morning. May he not come suddenly and find you sleeping. Well, our guest today is going to tell us about four women of faith he featured in a series of articles on combating what he calls the globalization of indifference. These women are not sleeping. They are alert and in tune with Christ's call to serve those in need around us. James Day is a fine author and journalist. He also manages the EWTN studios next door. He recently published, through our excellent weekly diocesan newspaper, OC Catholic, a series of profiles of four strong women initiating courageous programs to help those in need while bucking the societal trend toward complete indifference. James Day, welcome again to Call Me Catholic.
Always good seeing you, Peggy and Jim, and hello to the listeners.
Yeah, thanks for being here. Now, last time you were here, we talked about your latest book, your new book, your debut book on Pope Benedict. Father Benedict, you called him, because his teaching had such a profound impact on your spiritual life. Well, again, you are here to talk about another set of people who have made a very powerful impression on you. The series is called Go Boldly in Love, and it profiles four inspirational, I'd like to call them holy, but Dorothy Day would probably agree that they should shun that title, women working to make a difference in the four different area, in four very different areas of humanity. So, can you set the stage for this discussion? What was the inspiration here? Was it the women? Was it their causes? Was it the cultural environment we live in?
Oh, awesome. Wonderful to talk about this with you. Almost a year ago, my wife and I were having a conversation about kind of what it meant about Pope Francis's peripherals and margins and going out and culture of encounter. You know, his phrases he's been throwing out since his pontificate started about 4 years ago. And kind of breaking that down into tangible examples of what that means. And from there, I thought about just investigating further how that's actualizing in our local community. So that was the beginning of it.
Okay. Well, it seems personal to you, James, because I'm going to quote you in your opening paragraph of the first article. And you say, and this is, I'm quoting from you. It says, while there is undoubtedly concern for the well-being of the underprivileged whose lives have been upended, Catholics as a united force remain a sleeping giant in swaying their influence to the major societal problems of the day. In not only the right to life, but also the quality of life. That's a really powerful statement on our Catholic culture right now.
That's a prescient observation, because in that developing this idea, what you just read was the root of it.
Mm-hmm.
How are we actualizing things that we say we believe, or that we're taught, basically putting love into action? So I wanted to dive further into that on a local level. And basically, my wife sort of challenged me and said, where is this happening mm-hmm. around us?
And how did you discover that? Because you came up with four very good examples here in Southern California, a place where many people would feel is a spiritual wasteland.
Yeah. Well, originally, Pope Francis was an inspiration for diving deeper locally, particularly his phrase, which I'm sure we'll touch on later, the globalization of indifference.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so from there, you know, looking at his outreach to the, you know, the marginalized, the peripheries, started to research further what was going on in the Catholic world, in the greater community of Southern California, communities or organizations that were really making a difference. And I started to do a whole slew. You know, social justice isn't really my forte, you know, so this was a new avenue for me to go into. And out of that came various organizations such as Habitat for Humanity, Dorothy Day's Catholic Worker, and other individually started organizations that individuals started,
mm-hmm.
all with the intention to break down this globalization of indifference, creating a culture encounter, and going out into the peripheries.
Well, we're going to get into the profiles of each one of those women in four very, very different aspects of what you call social justice. But let me ask you, so you started out with this sense of there's a void here. After doing your research and writing these profiles and digging in and probably having to discern which four charities or ministries to profile, do you feel better? Do you feel a little more uplifted by the fact that there are people out there, there are movements that are working positively toward change?
I'm totally bowled over.
Oh, good.
Because I didn't realize, only as I was coordinating these interviews and coordinating the research, did I realize that all of these contacts that were coming up in my investigations were women.
Okay, so that was a coincidence. You didn't seek out women in particular.
Yes. No, I didn't know. It started with the organizations, the topics, you know, homelessness, young people on the streets or the unborn.
The terminally ill,
whether, you know, hospice for those who can afford it or, you know, and those who can't.
Mm-hmm.
And all of them turned out to be the managers and the founders of these organizations turned out to be women.
Fantastic. Well, and I mentioned it in our introduction that this is a great point in news history for us to introduce women who are empowered for good change and not just victims. We're seeing women, you know, modeled as victims or profiled as victims here. And you took them and profiled, you know, courage, women that are courage, women courageous in making a difference. So let's get into some of these people because they are the meat of your, in addition to the fact that you're an excellent writer, but these are the meat and the substance of your content. First person was Tristan Segundalar, who works for Habitat for Humanity here. And she, interestingly, she is trying to coalesce all the Catholics, even though Habitat is not intrinsically a Catholic organization. She's trying to organize all the Catholic parishes to be a force within Habitat.
Yeah, exactly. Something I didn't know about prior to diving into this. Of course, I think the nation is familiar with Habitat for Humanity. As we mm-hmm. know, it's all over the United States. What it has that I didn't know is a faith component, which is very central mm-hmm. To its mission, which is love in action. And Tristan is the faith relations manager. So when I saw that aspect, I really, you know, this was a Catholic piece. So I really needed to, you know, to keep the Catholic focus. And here Habitat for Humanity has its own faith department. So that's where the interview with her started, and we grew from there.
Was it her idea to do that, or did Habitat say, we'd like to have, you know, some specific faith outreach, you know, so you're talking only to this faith, or, you know, all the Baptist churches or all the Jewish temples are coming together?
From my perspective, I think that's a national part of Habitat for Humanity. What she has done, she's really started an initiative that is unique to Southern California and the Diocese of Orange, which is the Catholic Coalition,
mm-hmm.
forming parishes around the diocese to really put what they hear from the pulpit, from their parishes, and actually get out into the community to do something tangible as a whole, and that goes back to what you were saying about Catholics coming together. Mm-hmm. You know, that usually this idea of, well, someone else will take care of it. That's never been the perspective of the Catholic Church in any aspect of life. We haven't, the church militant doesn't let others do it. It leads and others follow.
Well, and that is our legacy as Catholics. I mean, we have built hospitals, we've built universities, you know, we've done more than any other governmental agency has done. The Catholic Church has achieved more. But do you think that today there's a little more lethargy because of distraction? There's too much competing for this kind of good work?
It goes back to what Pope Francis was talking about, what was this globalization of indifference. And that's really what spoke to me. You know, kind of, I don't want to call myself a millennial. I guess I am part of that age range.
Ooh, oh, millennial. We have a millennial in the studio, Jimmy G.
Yeah, you know. But it's this idea of apathy and indifference and just saying, well, it doesn't pertain to me. So, again, someone else will take care of it. So it was out of that that really drove me to find these really passionate people, Tristan among them.
Well, let's talk about
living their faith in their work.
And it's contagious. So when you are with these people, and we have met Tristan before, she's a young woman. That's also very cool. She's not, you know, she's young and she's taking her energy and her ambition and she's channeling it into this really fine ministry. Another woman whose profile really, really touched me was Rita Ray. Now, Rita Ray is trying to come up with permanent supportive housing for the terminally ill homeless. And I think this is perhaps one of the most ambitious ministries that you profiled, James.
It is. And it really took me. I think a lot of folks who are reading it, they're familiar, not to downplay the other groups. So I think they're very surprised by this initiative. Because it's not nationally, it's her own ministry, it's Totus Tuus. I found it in a small ad in the OC Catholic that she was advertising. She's, you know, looking for help and wanted to get the name out that she was starting this, and it really struck me right around the time I was doing this research.
Oh.
And it turned out
Holy,
you know,
Spirit.
And all of these women, Peggy, all, you know, we were talking social justice earlier, they all embody what I think is authentic Catholic spirituality. I mean, these are women who are deeply, deeply Catholic, but they're not doing it in the sense of a political social justice, which I think sometimes the church gets caught up in certain aspects of the church.
Yeah.
And so Rita Ray is talking about total consecration to Jesus through Mary and going through that devotion as being and coming out of that saying, I have to do something. I have to use my talents for those who don't have anything.
Well, and it seems, of all the plans that I was reading about through your profiles, I thought, ooh, this seems so ambitious to not only find the terminally ill, but the homeless, and to help find a home for them to live in, because she's trying to give them the complete comforts of someone that's living at home, not a temporary shelter, but a true home. And I think it could be one of those ideas that fleets through your head. You might think, wouldn't it be nice if we could do this? But like you said, we just kind of walk away and think someone else will take care of it. Well, Rita Ray is taking care of it. This is going to be the first year she's going to house 4 terminally ill homeless people?
Right. That is her intention. At least that was her intention when we did the interview. Now, this process took about, the idea came in early spring. I did the interviews and research over the course of the spring. Finished the piece in summer, submitted it to Orange County Catholic, which premiered then in November. So it was almost a whole year process of researching these women. I believe that she is at the point where she is ready to bring in 4 terminally ill.
And she has a house.
A house totally theirs. And that's where Totus Tuus comes in.
Oh, that's sweet.
The John Paul II motto, totally yours. Mm-hmm. And as we know, John Paul II was so Marian that it was totally yours through Mary. And she says, I do everything through Mary. I mean, it was, we were speaking about Advent. I mean, what a great way to embody a Marian perspective in your faith and in your work.
Well, faith has got to be a component in these women's drive, because it's the kind of thing where you think, how else can you do that? You can't just find 4 terminally ill people that are homeless and get a home for them, boom, like that. You have to believe that you can do the impossible, and you can only do that through through a very, very powerful faith. Author and journalist James Day and I are going to continue this important conversation about how these four women he profiled recently in a series of newspaper articles are combating what Pope Francis and James call the globalization of indifference with a real commitment to care. These women's stories will inspire us to take up our legacy as proactive Catholics and impact change around us in whatever ways we can. Change for the good. And what better time to begin that than during the Advent season. So stick around for the rest of the conversation. I'm Peggy Normandin, and you're listening to Call Me Catholic on the EWTN Global Catholic Radio Network.
Exploring the perils and blessings of embracing a Catholic identity. This is Call Me Catholic with Peggy Normandin.
Well, greetings all, and thanks for staying with us here on Call Me Catholic. I am Peggy Normandin, and we're having an important and even maybe just a little bit difficult conversation today about serving others in the face of obstacles and even indifference. Author and journalist James Day is our guest, and his series of newspaper articles called Go Boldly in Love showcase the stories of four very strong but humble women whose work and dedication and faith have impacted change in areas where change was needed. So, James, we talked about Tristan Segundalar and her faith coalition in Habitat for Humanity and Rita Ray in her Totus Tuus hospice home, which I think is just so beautiful. Let's now talk about Leah Smith, who I think is a fascinating. I've known of Leah Smith for quite a while in Orange County. She and her husband, Dwight, founded the local Catholic worker home, Isaiah House. And you called her in your article fiery. And I would say, yep, that's my impression, too.
Well, I think I may have been referring to Dorothy Day, but nonetheless.
Oh, okay, all right.
The founder of Catholic
Worker. She models herself after Dorothy.
I found quite a similarity between the two women. It speaks to Dorothy Day's enduring influence, not only amongst Catholic Worker, but people who strive to bring change through faith.
So for our listeners who aren't familiar with the Catholic Worker movement, can you explain what the Catholic Worker program is and what Dwight and his wife Leah, and we're talking about Leah specifically today, have done here in Orange County?
Right. Catholic Worker was started in New York City by Dorothy Day and Peter Morin in the 1930s. There's now 240 Catholic workers around the United States, and they do a lot of outreach, and it's a place for those disenfranchised for meals
and clothing and things like that.
Yeah, and but also as a sign of hope, I think. But what's interesting I found about, in my research about Orange County is that Isaiah House is always sort of referred to as being less, it's more Isaiah House and less Catholic Worker. And then I found it was the local Catholic Worker. And I said, oh, Dorothy Day's story is so great. Mm-hmm. It needs to be maybe retold in this new environment with my interview with Leah Smith. So I loved delving into Dorothy Day's life, whose cause is, under canonization.
Consideration. Yep.
Under consideration. So that was exciting.
I think Dorothy Day herself is the only one that's going to get in the way of her eventual canonization because she was so self-deprecating. But Leah and Dwight, or we're talking about Leah here, when did they first move in and establish this home in Santa Ana?
They've actually been there for 20 years, okay? But Isaiah House was actually operational prior to that.
Okay. And just so our listeners know, this couple live in this house. They are both professional people. But they live in this house that houses all the homeless and feeds countless more every day. And I have visited there many times. I know friends that have worked there regularly and made beautiful contributions there. And it just absolutely overwhelms me with awe to see this couple living. They live there. They live there.
Right. When I was kind of putting together the formal description of you know, Leah Smith, Isaiah House, Catholic Worker. I said, well, what would be your title? She said, oh, just call me Catholic Worker. So I love that, that humility. And that really comes through when you actually visit the place as you're describing.
Yeah, because you go upstairs and you see, oh, that's where Leah and, Dwight are. And then, oh, this is some people that are living in this room and that room. And so their environment is constantly changing. They're the anchor for that house of that has all the transient population in it.
I have to say there is, and I mentioned this at the end of the profile on Leah, there's that sense of realness. Like you are, when you step into places where there's people who are on the precipice of life, you get a real sense of, I almost have to say do or die.
Well, and I wanted to pull a quote from your profile on that one. You talk about the impression Leah and Isaiah House left on you after you visited there for the interview. And you said, and now I'm quoting you, you said, I was left with a rather startling image, startling but ultimately unsurprising. It was none other than the person of Jesus of Nazareth.
Yes, the actual Galilean, what it probably was like in his presence. And, you know, one can still get that sense of Christ's presence today through things like Isaiah House or Rita Ray. That sense of veracity. I have little time. I love life. I'm humorous. I enjoy the moments of life, but I have to get down to the nitty gritty, to the truth of the matter, to the heart of the matter. And that's what's going on with these women and at Isaiah House.
Well, and what else I like about Leah Smith and her husband's approach to this is that it's very much, they welcome all kinds of support. So if you want to help, they got a job for you. You want to bring donuts every Sunday? Yep. You want to clean up, do manicures for the women as they sit and wait to come into breakfast? Sure. You want to cook eggs? They've got jobs for you. So they don't do it alone. No. They just facilitate this opportunity for everybody else in the community to serve.
Yeah. And it's a reminder of discipleship and responsibility as a Catholic Christian to put your faith into action, and that there are places who are willing to use your, you know, who are going to put you to work. And if you can't do it, manually, well, then there's other ways that you can help out.
Mm-hmm.
It's not these people are taking care of it. I can just go on with my life. There's now a sense of responsibility to that. And look at Orange County. Look at what's happening around the diocese in terms of people on the streets, mm-hmm. In terms of, Leah even talks about children mm-hmm. being homeless. And my wife is actually seeing that at her middle school with children who are homeless. Mm-hmm. I mean, 1 in 30 in the United States, 2.5 million children are ensnared in homelessness.
Our parish does, through the youth ministry, does a Christmas night for homeless teenagers. I thought, I never even considered that category of homeless teenagers. How do you find them? And they do. They bring them in and they celebrate them. I've not been there, but it's quite beautiful. Leah said something that's kind of, you know, Catholic Worker is kind of a gritty Catholic charity. It's not a pretty soften around the edges. It's gritty. And Leah's quote to you kind of personifies that. She said, Catholic Worker confronts our unwillingness to love. That's kind of harsh. But it's true, isn't it?
Yeah, it's not afraid to call out the globalization of indifference. I have to keep going back to
that
phrase.
Let's do it. That's the recurring theme here.
But and that's what I love about that matter of fact veracity that I felt about the Gospels. The Gospels are totally matter of fact. Mm-hmm. They're not flowery. They're not writing for their own for the sake of their own voices being heard. You know, Matthew's not worried about his stylistic. His prose there. So, he's all about the truth. And I think that's that unwillingness to love is, speaking very much into Catholic themes of, forgiveness and turning the other cheek but defending the faith and bringing others, you know, closer to that, triune God, embodied in Christ.
Well, it speaks to the fact that we have to engage our will in this because, you know, love is a choice we make. It's not just something we fall into.
Yeah, that's actually good to go back to Benedict the 16th, who always talked about blending the intellect and the will. The Catholic certainly is, through education and formation, should have a good grasp of the faith and the responsibility intellectually. But are we really doing that willfully? And I think, unfortunately, that's where a lot of things fall away. It also also makes clear through Leah Smith and these other women, and I actually think I mentioned this, but I have to say this again.
Sure.
Is that they are all about actualizing the faith tangibly and creating change that is so inspiring that I think can propel culture in a totally different way. If we saw more of how they're viewing faith and life as they do.
Yeah, absolutely. I think that faith, their faith is palpable. I mean, you cannot embark on these kinds of endeavors without faith. You know, just to digress for a quick minute here, James Day, are you familiar with the website Church Pop?
Yes, I am. Okay. An EWTN affiliate.
Yes, yeah, churchpop.com. And I just want to give it a little plug here because they do wonderful stories and profiles on that website too. And they're not quite as lofty as your writing, James, which I think is quite extraordinary, but they're quick little human interest stories, and you can go to their site, you could subscribe to them, and they'll pop something in your email every day. I went to the site this morning just to see what was on there, and they have an article on the hidden symbolism behind the miraculous medal. They have a great story there. I want you to go to this story. As a matter of fact, it's a little video about a NASCAR driver, a very popular, adorable NASCAR driver, who, when he was receiving his award, was thanking all his team, and then also said, "Oh yeah, it's Friday. We need to also pray for the suffering souls in purgatory." Now, you're not going to see that on the news, but it was on the news. Did you see it, Timmy?
I saw that. That was amazing.
I was absolutely charming and so authentic. But this is what Church Pop is. It's about real moments of Catholic culture.
Great website.
Yeah, really, really good website. So check it out. And if you have kids that you're trying to encourage in the faith, you know, just kind of slip that into the conversation, because this is very accessible, very entertaining, very digestible stuff, but also educational and uplifting as well. Okay, so to return to our conversation, James Day, I'd like to now kind of get into the fourth profile. And she is a woman from Los Angeles, Astrid Gutierrez, who is the executive director for the Los Angeles Pregnancy Services, which I thought was very interesting, because when you look at that name, Los Angeles Pregnancy Services, you immediately think, oh, this must be a resource for women who are seeking an abortion. But quite the contrary.
Yeah, indeed. EWTN viewers, listeners may be familiar with Astrid, as she was part of the triune anchors of Women of Faith.
Oh, with Jeanette Bankum?
I'm sorry, Catholic View for Women.
Oh, okay. All right. Yeah. Oh, okay.
And so she is also an anchor, a recurring anchor for EWTN's Spanish March for Life, One Life LA that we do in January. So she actually comes over to the studio here. So she's a wonderful personality who's both in front of the camera, but her real passion, of course, is life, openness to life, and doing it in such a way that's not preachy or proselytizing.
Mm-hmm. No, she's very approachable. And I think people in the pro-life business need to be approachable. They can't be holier than thou or, you know, sort of chastisers. What I really also like is that she is behind the VITA initiative. And this is important because its mission is to train and activate pro-life leaders, especially in the Hispanic community.
Right, which is her focus. Right, exactly. You know, I almost wish, looking back now, maybe if I were to ever expand this this profile. Originally, I'd submitted this to Orange County Catholic as one whole piece, and then they split it up over a number of issues. I almost wish I had started with Astrid, because I think sometimes we forget that none of this, we wouldn't be talking, well, we wouldn't be here without this openness to life from the womb on.
Absolutely.
So, and what she's doing is something that I really want to highlight. It's not just peripheral part of a pie, but it's the whole pie. I mean, she's inspiring women who, even if in a low income neighborhood in Los Angeles, can still bring a child, you know, into the world who, and we have some examples here in the article, mm-hmm. and still have a hope filled life ahead of them.
Well, and she also is very much in favor of educating people from the beginning, that if they grow up knowing that life is precious, life is holy, and we honor life at the beginning and at the end, then we wouldn't have this struggle at middle age or when they're, you know, getting into adolescence to have to introduce this concept to them. It should be part of our lexicon.
Yeah, the education aspect that you just mentioned is so critical. And in all aspects of knowing the reality, not just knowing statistics or you know, which is important, but I think it actually separates the reality of the situation. Knowing your faith in tandem separates what we're doing, what the Catholic Church is doing in terms of social justice, from just being another Pope Francis term, another NGO, and that's just
non-governmental organization. You're right.
That's not what we're in the business of.
You know, another thing I want to point out, in fact, in your beginning of your article, you said by their witness and results, these women are prompting others to follow their leads. Such influence to change is the vital ingredient in transforming one's life from the will of one's ego to one totally dedicated to the will of another. Metanoia, conversion. And what I thought, so these women are powerful examples to us. What's interesting in each one of your profiles, you identified who were the influences in their life? Many times it was the saints, whether it was Mother Teresa, Saint Mother mm-hmm. Teresa, Pope Saint John mm-hmm. Paul II, Saint Elizabeth of Hungary,
yeah.
and the Good Dorothy Samaritan Day. In the parable,
yeah,
Dorothy
right,
Day.
Right, Matthew 25.
So example is so important. You're not just doing the work, you're setting the work in motion for others to follow.
Yeah, absolutely. And how, you know, that just speaks to the veracity of the faith. Mm-hmm. And that's what we're supposed to do. We are supposed to pass it on, inspire others. It's not about us. It's not about saying we're better than you or that we have this, we're right. It's just that this is what we're called to do. We need to make the world a better place. We need to save souls. And, we need to do this tangibly. We can't just talk about it.
Well, what would you say to the people that are listening to us right now and saying, well, I have no way to begin. I mean, I wouldn't know where to begin to tackle that. I mean, am I supposed to go up to the man on the corner who's homeless and say, come on in, I'll put you up for the night, even though I have little children at home?
You know, you were saying this is sort of a difficult conversation. It is, because it's so gritty, but it's so vital. But there's a place for everybody. That's up to the individual and the community that they're in. You have to discern. You have to do come from a Jesuit background. So you have to do the Ignatian discernment. And you were just saying all these women came, were inspired by others. So who in our rich 2000 history is speaking to you? You know, think about their lives. Who's coming up? You were mentioning the feast days earlier when we started. Who is, who's the saint of the day for today?
You're right, absolutely right.
Look at them. Mm-hmm. Think about that. Find what is your heart saying? Pray to them that they can intercede for the Holy Spirit to start guiding you into some direction. And, this whole idea of metanoia mm-hmm. is a turning away from one direction to another. So you may not even know where you end up, but you could be all the better for it.
Well, absolutely right. We are the better for having had this conversation, James. So I really appreciate the fact that you followed your instincts to write about it, because that's part of the process too. I mean, you went out and learned about them, and then you told us about them. Once again, giving exposure to these beautiful models of Christian work. And it's a great way for us to embrace Advent. Just one little thing. I think all those steps that you talked about in terms of prayer and discernment, there's something for us out there. Maybe it's not what Tristan did. Maybe it's not what Rita could do, but there is something that we can do. And we have to soften our hearts, open our hearts to Christ's message and the work of the Holy Spirit, and we can do it all. Thank you. And please keep writing, James Day. I think you are such a gifted writer. Come up with a new book.
Okay.
Just
thanks.
Like that. Or a screenplay. Even better, a screenplay.
Well, I'll have to ask my wife about that.
He has such humility, friends.
And many thanks to Orange County Catholic for publishing this. It was an idea that I pitched to them that gave me total okay, and so I really appreciate them running it.
You know, and you can find copies of his articles by going to occatholic.com. That's the site that has all these previous articles. And check into the series that's called Go Boldly in Love by James Day, our guest today. We'll give you great material for discussion around your Advent table as you light the first candle tomorrow. Give it some consideration, because he has brought us into some really interesting confrontations with what it means to be Catholic. James Day, thank you.
Thank you, Peggy. Thank you, Jim. Thank you to the listeners, and blessed Advent to all of you.
And the same to you and your wife. So kind of switching gears a little bit here, even though Advent has many meanings for everybody, we're going to talk to kids now who have a much simpler impression of what it means to participate in the Christmas story. So here we go with our Chatting with Catholics segment for the day, when I take my microphone to some kids in the Diocese of Orange and ask them what character they like to play in the nativity scene.
Call me Catholic. We're chatting with Catholics.
I'm walking onto the campus of Holy Family Cathedral School in the Diocese of Orange, and I am going to enter into the second grade classroom and ask these cute second graders who they would like to play in the nativity story. If they had a chance to consider themselves in that beautiful story of the birth of Christ, where would they see themselves? Let's see what they have to say. So my question to you guys is, if you were to think about all the different people who are involved in the story of the birth of Jesus, who would you like to be for that moment? Let's just go over some of the characters. There's the shepherds that are out tending their sheep, and then the angels appear to them and announce the birth of Jesus, and the big star in the sky attracts those three wise men who travel very far distance from the east to pay homage to baby Jesus. There's the innkeepers who are trying to find lodging for all the people who have come into town for the census that Augustus Caesar has imposed on them. And then if there's the people that are living nearby and there's Mary and there's Joseph. There's so many people involved in the scene. So
the angel Gabriel.
Oh, he was at the very beginning of the story when he announced to Mary that she was going to give birth to Jesus. Now, why did you pick angel Gabriel?
Because he's an angel.
Very powerful being, right? The angels and Gabriel especially. That's awesome. Okay. Who would you be?
Mary.
Mary, tell me why.
Because my name is Mary.
Oh, that's perfect. And can you imagine how Mary felt holding her baby for the first time?
Yes, I think she felt very excited that her baby was going to be the Savior and do very wonderful miracles.
Beautiful. Thank you, Mary. That's a wonderful testimony. I hope you get to play her in a nativity scene sometime. How about you?
I want to be a king.
One of the wise men. Okay, if you were one of the kings, what would you bring as your gift to the baby?
Gold.
Oh, okay. And would you wear the big fancy garbs?
Yes.
And would you like to ride on a camel?
Yeah.
I hear it's pretty uncomfortable.
Mm-hmm.
King it is then. How about you?
An angel.
Okay, one of the angels that announced to the shepherds, or one of the angels that came after that and sang in glorious multitude?
One of the angels that announced to the shepherds.
And you know, the shepherds were just out there doing their regular job with the sheep, and nobody's paying attention to the shepherds, and they get to see the angels. Isn't that beautiful? God sent the message to the shepherds out there.
Yeah.
Okay, well, good job as an angel for doing that. Okay, who are you going to be?
Joseph.
Why Joseph?
That's
a lot of work to be Joseph. You have to be strong. You have to be brave.
I choose Joseph because I do a lot of work at my house.
Do you like to work with wood?
Yeah.
Like carpentry. Okay, good job. What would you like to be?
The king.
One of the wise men that traveled. What would be your gift? You can pick anything. Remember have you ever heard the song of the drummer boy? And he didn't have anything but his music to play for Jesus, and that was a great gift. So what would you bring?
I would bring flowers.
Okay, that's very sweet.
I'll be a wise man.
Okay, and if you were a wise man, what would you bring for Jesus? Because they were bringing him gifts from afar, right? Exotic gifts.
Music.
Music? Okay, how about just bringing Jesus your love and just your company? He likes that too.
Yeah.
And I would want to be Mary.
To be Mary, of course, and hold Jesus for the first time.
Yes.
Do you like to hold babies?
Yes.
Okay.
I want to be Mary too.
You want to be Mary? Do you pray to Mary?
Yeah.
Yeah, that's good because she has great power with God and she's a beautiful, consoling mother too.
I would like to be the star.
You like to be the star? That's awesome. Tell me about that.
It's bright and I like being bright.
Do you want to be a star someday?
Yeah.
Well, you know, the star was the big message in the sky that it proclaimed the place where Jesus was born. There's a beautiful movie out right now called The Star. Have you heard of that movie? Have you seen it? Oh, it's a wonderful movie. I hope you get a chance to see it. Have your mom and dad take you. Because it's about how the animals participated during the time of the birth, and they were attracted to the star, too. Okay, what would you be?
I would want to be Jesus.
Well, you're going right to the top. He had a pretty tough road ahead of him after that, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Would you like to be born in a little manger?
Yeah.
Where the animals were?
Yes.
I bet it was cold.
I would like to be Jesus because my name starts with J too.
Well, good for you. Will you develop a close relationship with Jesus, okay?
A donkey.
One of the donkeys, okay. Donkeys played a big role in Jesus' life, didn't they?
Yeah.
They carried him to Egypt after Jesus was born, right? And they had to escape to Egypt. And do you remember the donkey being a part in another part of Jesus' life?
No.
How about Palm Sunday when he came into Jerusalem on a donkey?
Yeah.
Okay. That's a very humble role to choose.
I want to be an angel.
The singing angel or the angel Gabriel or the angels that just announced to the shepherds?
A singing angel.
Okay. Are you in the choir? Do you have a favorite hymn or carol during Christmas time?
No.
Joy to the World, maybe?
Yeah.
Okay. You're easy. How come nobody wants to be one of the shepherd boys? Is that too much work for you? They had a really important role. Okay, go ahead.
I want to be the shepherd boys.
Okay. Do you like working with sheep?
Yeah, I love sheep. They're so soft.
They are so soft. That lanolin, kind of a creamy substance on your fingers. Yeah, it's really nice.
I would want to be Jesus because he can make miracles.
Yeah. Okay, what would be a miracle you'd do right now?
Fly.
Fly, okay. That's a superpower.
I want to be a wise man.
Okay, and are you wise now?
No.
Have you got some work to do?
Yeah.
Okay. We all do.
One of the angels.
Okay, an angel. I think you look like an angel. Okay, Mrs. Christian, who would you like to play in the nativity story?
I would like to be Mary, because she had a big role in our lives and Jesus' life, of course.
Yeah. Mrs. Eric, who would you be in the nativity story?
I would like to be Mary, because okay. I love Jesus so much, and it would be good to be his mom.
And to hold him.
and to all of them. Thank you.
Beautiful. Hey, Jimmy G, have you ever thought about that, who you'd like to be in the nativity scene?
No, I haven't.
Well, nobody.
A shepherd. I'll be a shepherd.
Well, shepherd, that's always the easy one. How about an innkeeper? I mean, I would love to have been an innkeeper.
I wouldn't have it in my heart to say there's no room.
Well, that's why I want to be the innkeeper. I'm going to say, no, I can find something for you here. You know, you'd like to be that person where you think, oh, maybe I could have made a difference. I could have made an impact there. But it was fun to hear their stories and their impressions of it. And I just think it's important to pay attention to those things and not just put the little figurines up in the nativity set without thinking, What were the shepherd's role in this? And, you know, look at the animals. It's such a humble setting for Jesus.
I always think there's just so much for us to learn from the voices of the little ones. Yes. There's just so much we can gain from them.
And Christmas is full of those really simple but profound little beautiful examples of what it meant to be a child at that time and, you know, what it meant for Jesus to be born in a manger in such a humble setting.
Yeah.
Hey, Barbara McGuigan is coming up next, as she always does, with 2 hours of The Good Fight. And then I want to call attention to a show that's coming on at 4 p.m. Eastern, The Catholic Cafe with Deacon Jeff. They are going to be talking about Christmas movies today, which I think is a really fun subject. I guess the question is, should Catholics watch Christmas movies before Christmas? And I think they come to the resounding decision, yes, you can certainly do that.
Of course.
It's not in the catechism that we can't watch Christmas movies. So enjoy yourself some good Advent this year, kids. We've given you some good examples here of how we can go out and be of service, but enjoy the fun frills of the season, too. Mostly, we want you to come back and join us again next week, same day, same time, for more good news from our good faith. Until then, I'm Peggy Normandin, but you can call me Catholic.
You've been listening to Call Me Catholic with Peggy Normandin, live from the Christ Cathedral campus in Garden Grove, California. Call Me Catholic is a co-production of EWTN Radio and Orange County Catholic Radio. Heard weekly on the EWTN Global Catholic Radio Network.